Act 4. 90. Exterior. The little tall lighthouse. Late day. The snow flies past it so thickly we can only make out its shape, and of course its light, each time it swings around. The waves crash high on the rocks of this promontory. The wind shrieks. 91. Exterior. Godso fish and lobster. Late day. This long building, part warehouse, part retail fish market, is far out on the dock. Waves smash into the dock, and foam splatters high, wetting the sides and roof of the building. As we watch, the wind tears a door free of its latch. It begins to bang back and forth. Nearby, a tarp blows free of the boat it's covering and whirls off into the snowy day. 92. Exterior. The Anderson House. Late day. A four-wheel drive is parked at the curb by the Wee Folks sign. Its windshield wipers are clapping back and forth rapidly, but the glass is still snowing up. Its headlights cut twin cones through the snow-choked air. The Wee Folks sign swings back and forth on its chain. On the porch, Molly Anderson is handing over a bundled-up Buster Carver and an equally bundled-up Pippa Hatcher to their moms, Angela and Melinda. The camera moves in on the porch. All three women have to shout in order to be heard over the howling wind. Melinda.
Pip, you sure you're all right?
Pippa.
Yes. Don Beals hurt my feelings, but they're better now.
Molly.
I'm sorry I had to call you early, guys.
Angela Carver.
It's okay. The radio says they're going to keep the bigger kids over in Machias at least tonight. The reach is too choppy to send them back on the water bus.
Molly.
Probably for the best.
Buster.
Mommy, I'm cold.
Angela Carver.
Course you are, but you'll be warm in the car, honey.
To Molly.
Are there more?
Molly.
Buster and Pippa are the last.
To Pippa.
You had an adventure, didn't you?
Pippa.
Yes, Mama. I've got a smaller button.
She honks her own nose. Neither Melinda nor Angela understand, but they laugh. It's cute. They understand that much. Angela Carver.
We'll see you Monday if the roads are open. Wave a bye, Buster.
Buster obediently waves a bye. Molly waves one back as the mothers carry their babies down the steps and into the increasing fury of the storm. Then she goes back inside. 93. Interior. The Anderson House front hall with Molly and Ralphie. There's a mirror about halfway down by the telephone table. Ralphie has pulled a chair over and is standing on it so he can look at the red mark on the bridge of his nose. It's a birthmark, but actually more cute than disfiguring. Molly hardly notices him. She's relieved to be in out of the storm and even more relieved that her little charges have all been packed home for the day. She shakes the snow out of her hair, then takes off her parka and hangs it up. She looks at the stairs, winces at the memory of Pippa's misadventure, then snorts laughter. Molly, to herself,
the smaller button.
Ralphie, still looking in the mirror.
Mommy, why do I have to have this?
Molly goes to him, plants her chin on his shoulder, and looks at him in the mirror. They make a rather lovely mother and son portrait that way. She reaches around and touches the little red mark on his nose with love. Molly.
Your daddy calls it a fairy saddle. He says it means you were born lucky.
Ralphie.
Donnie Beals says it's a pimple.
Molly.
Donnie Beals is a nut.
She grimaces briefly. Nut isn't the word she'd probably use if given a free choice. Ralphie.
I don't like it. Even if it is a fairy saddle.
Molly.
Myself, I love it. But if you still feel the same way when you're older, we'll take you to Bangor and have it removed.
They can do that now. Okay?
Ralphie.
How much older do I have to be?
Molly.
10. How's that?
Ralphie.
Too long to wait. 10's old.
The phone rings. Molly picks it up. Molly.
Hello?
94. Interior. The market with Cat Withers. She's on the phone behind the counter. Tess Marchant is running the checkout operation by herself for the time being. There's still quite a line, although with the storm now on the rise, it's thinned a bit. Those people that are left buzz excitedly about the police call to the Clarendon house.
Cat. There you are. I've been trying to get you for almost 10 minutes.
95. Interior. The Anderson Hall with Molly and Ralphie. Through the rest of this conversation, the director will cut back and forth as he/she chooses, but we should see Molly almost unconsciously censoring her end, not asking all the questions she'd like to ask, because little pitchers have big ears. Molly.
I've mostly been out on the porch, handing kids over to their parents. I sent them home early. What's up, Katrina?
Cat.
Well, I don't want you to be scared or anything, but we got word that there's been a murder on the island. Old Martha Clarendon. Mike and Hatch have gone over there.
Molly.
What? Are you sure?
Cat.
I'm not sure of anything right now. This place has been a madhouse all day. Except that they went over there and Mike asked me to call you and say everything's under control.
Molly.
Is it?
Cat.
How do I know? Yeah, probably. Anyway, he wanted me to call before anyone else did it. If you see Melinda Hatcher...
Molly.
She just left here with Angie Carver. They're carpooling. You can get her at home in 15 minutes or so.
Outside, the wind rises in a shriek. Molly looks toward the sound.
Molly. Better give her 20.
Cat.
Okay.
Molly. There's no chance it's a, I don't know, a joke, a prank?
Cat.
Robbie Beals called it in. He doesn't do humor, you know?
Molly.
Yeah, I know.
Cat.
He said that the person who did it might still be there. I don't know if Mike would want me to tell you that or not, but I thought you had a right to know.
Molly closes her eyes for a moment, as if in pain. Probably she is in pain.
Cat.
Molly?
Molly.
I'm coming down to the store. If Mike gets there before I do, tell him to stay put.
Cat.
I'm not sure he'd want...
Molly.
Thanks, Cat.
She hangs up before Cat can say any more. She turns to Ralphie, who is still examining his birthmark in the mirror. He's so close to the glass that his eyes are rather charmingly crossed. She gives him a big smile that only a 4-year-old could believe in. Her eyes are clouded with worry.
Molly.
Let's go down to the store and see your daddy, big boy. What do you say?
Ralphie.
Daddy, yay!
He jumps down from his chair, then pauses, looking at her dubiously. Ralphie.
What about the storm? We've only got the car. It slides around in the snow.
Molly grabs his coat off the tree by the door and starts getting him into it at super speed. That big, false smile never leaves her face.
Molly.
Hey, it's only a 1/4 mile, and we'll come back with Daddy in the truck, because I bet he's going to close the market early. How's that?
Sound good?
Ralphie.
Yeah, excellent.
She zips his jacket up. As she does, we see she is terribly worried. 96. Exterior, in front of Martha Clarendon's house.
The storm is still getting worse by degrees. People are now having some trouble standing their ground against the wind-driven snow, but no one is left.
Robbie Beals has joined Mike and Hatch. His gun is still in his hand, but with the prisoner cuffed, he looks a little more at ease and has pointed the little pistol at the ground. Mike has opened the back of the Island Services vehicle. It has been outfitted to transport stray and sick animals. The floor is bare steel. There's a mesh barrier between this storage compartment and the back seat.
Mounted on the wall is a plastic water reservoir with a tube.
Hatch. You going to put him in there?
Mike. Unless you want to sit in the back seat with him and babysit.
Hatch. Takes the point.
Get in.
Linoge doesn't. At least, not immediately. He looks around at Robbie instead. Robbie doesn't care for that.
Linoge. Remember what I said, Robbie. Hell is repetition. He smiles at Robbie, a private smile, like the one he gave Mike. Then he gets into the back of the Island Services vehicle. Robbie, nervous.
He talks a lot of nonsense. I think he's crazy.
Linoge has to sit with his legs crossed and his head ducked, but this doesn't really seem to put him out in the least. He is still smiling, his handcuffed hands clasped in his lap as Mike swings the doors shut.
Mike, how does he know your name? Did you tell him?
Robbie drops his eyes.
I don't know. All I do know is that no sane person would want to kill Martha Clarendon. I'll come down to the store with you, help you clear this up. We'll have to get in touch with the state police.
Mike, Robbie, I know this goes against your grain, but you have to let me handle this. Robbie bristles.
I'm the town manager here, in case you forgot. I have a responsibility.
Mike, so do I, and our responsibilities are clearly divided in the town charter. Right now, Ursula needs you over at the town hall a lot more than I need you at the constables. Come on, Hatch. Mike turns away from the furious town manager.
Robbie.
Listen here.
He starts to chase them up the side of the Island Services vehicle, then realizes he's being undignified in front of a dozen of his constituents. Mrs. Kingsbury stands nearby with her arm around the shoulders of a frightened-looking Davy Hopewell. Behind them, Roberta Coyne and her husband Dick look at Robbie with poker faces that can't quite mask their contempt. Robbie stops chasing Mike. He sticks his gun in his topcoat pocket. Robbie, still furious.
You're getting too big for your britches, Anderson.
Mike takes no notice. He opens the driver's side of the Island Services vehicle. Robbie, seeing them about to make their getaway, fires the only other arrow in his quiver. Robbie.
And get the sign off that damn dummy on your porch. It's not funny.
Mrs. Kingsbury puts a hand over her mouth to hide a snicker. Robbie doesn't see. Probably lucky for her. The Island Services vehicle starts up and its lights come on. It heads upstreet, bound for the market and the constable's office contained therein. Robbie stands, slump-shouldered and fuming, then looks around at the cluster of people in the snowy street. Robbie.
What are you standing here for? Go on home. Show's over.
He stalks back to his Lincoln. 97. Exterior, Lower Main Street in the snow. Headlights appear in the screaming white, and the car eventually materializes behind them. It's small, light, and two-wheel drive. It's going slow and slipping back and forth. Already there are at least 4 inches of fresh snow on the road. 98. Interior. The car with Molly and Ralphie. Up ahead, we see lights looming out of the snow on the left, plus the long porch on the hanging lobster traps. Ralphie.
It's the store! Yay!
Molly.
Yay is right.
She turns into the parking area in front. Now that she's here, Molly realizes that coming out was dangerous, but who could have guessed the snow would pile up so fast? She turns off the engine and allows herself a small slump over the wheel. Ralphie.
Mom? You okay?
Molly.
Fine.
Ralphie.
Get me out of my car seat, okay? I want to see Daddy.
Molly.
You bet.
She opens her door. 99. Exterior. The Island Services vehicle. It turns left at the blinker and heads toward the market through the thickening snow. 100. Interior. The Island Services vehicle with Mike and Hatch. Hatch.
What are we going to do with him, Mike?
Mike. Sotto voce.
Keep your voice down.
Hatch looks guilty.
We'll have to call the state police barracks in Machias.
Bobby was right about that much. But what are the chances they'll be able to take him off our hands in this? Hatch looks doubtfully out the window at the pelting snow. This situation keeps complicating itself, and Hatch isn't a very complicated guy. They continue to talk in low voices so Linoge won't overhear. Mike.
Robbie said the TV was on, and I heard it when we were in the hall. Did you?
Hatch.
At first, yeah. The weather. Then the guy must have... He trails away, remembering. Hatch. It was busted. Busted all to hell and gone. He didn't do it while we were in the hall, either. You bust a TV picture tube, it makes a noise, like, boof. We would have heard. Mike nods. It must have been the radio. It's almost a question. Mike doesn't reply. Both of them know it wasn't the radio. 101. Interior. Winoge in the animal transport compartment. Smiling. We just see the tips of the fangs in his mouth. Winoge knows what they know, and in spite of their low tones, he hears them. 102. Exterior. Angle on the market in the snow. Afternoon. The Island Service's four-wheel drive rolls past the parking lot in the snow. The little car Molly and Ralphie came in is already wearing a fresh coat, and then pulls into an alley that runs down the side of the store and around to the back. 103. Exterior. The alley from the far end. The Island Service's vehicle comes toiling toward us out of the snow, headlights glaring. The camera pulls back as it reaches the snowy yard at the rear. There is a loading dock at the back of the market with a sign that says, Deliveries Only. Go through market for constable business. The vehicle pulls up here, backing into place. For this sort of deal, the dock is mighty convenient, and Mike and Hatch do have a delivery to make. They get out and walk around to the back. Hatch is as nervous as before, but Mike has got his own nerves under control as they reach the rear of the vehicle. Mike, safety off? Hatch looks first surprised, then guilty. He pushes the shotgun's safety off. Mike, who has his own gun in his hand, nods in satisfaction. Mike, you're up top. There are stairs at one end of the loading dock. Hatch climbs them and stands with his shotgun at port arms. Mike unlocks the back doors of the vehicle, then stands back. Mike, step out on the dock. Don't approach my partner. Sounding like a guy on Adam 12 makes Mike uncomfortable, but under the circumstances, partner is the right word. Linoge steps out, still awkwardly bent over but graceful, and still smiling that faint corners-of-the-mouth smile. Hatch takes a step back to give him room as Linoge mounts the steps. Their prisoner is cuffed, and they have the guns, but Hatch is still scared of Linoge. Linoge stands in the driving snow as comfortable as a man in his own living room. Mike climbs the stairs to the loading dock, searching in his pants pocket. He brings out a ring of keys, separates out the one that opens the back door, and gives it to Hatch. Mike keeps his pistol pointed slightly down, but in Linoge's direction. 104. Exterior. Hatch at the loading door. He bends and slides the key into the lock. 105. Exterior. Linoge close up. He's watching Hatch very closely, and now we see a flicker of blackness in his eyes. 106. Exterior. Mike close up. He frowns. Did he see something? It was too quick to tell. 107. Exterior. The loading dock door. Close up. Hatch twists the key. Sound. A snap. And now Hatch's hand is holding nothing but the head of the key. 108. Exterior. Resume loading dock. Hatch. Aw, sugar. Snapped right off. Must have been the cold. He begins to hammer on the door with a gloved fist. 109. Interior. The Island Constable's office. This was once part of the market's storage area. Now it boasts a desk, a few filing cabinets, a fax, a CB radio, and a bulletin board on the wall. There is also a jail cell in the corner. The cell looks sturdy enough, but homemade, a kind of do-it-yourself project. It's a strictly temporary facility for weekend drunks and part-time hellraisers. Sound. Hammering on the door. Hatch. Voiceover. Hey! Anybody in there? Anybody? 110. Exterior. Resume loading dock. Mike. Forget it. Go around and open it from the inside. Hatch. You want me to leave you out here alone with him? Mike. Stress breaking through.
Unless you happen to see Lois or Superman hanging around in the alley.
Hatch, we could take him, Mike, through the market with half the island doing their storm shopping?
I don't think so.
Go on now.
Hatch gives him a doubtful look, then starts back down the stairs.
111.
Exterior, in front of the market. In snow that's thicker than ever, Robbie Beals's Lincoln comes spinning and slewing into the parking area, almost broadsiding Molly's little car. Robbie gets out and goes up the porch steps just as Peter Godso comes out of the market. Peter is a ruggedly handsome man in his early 40s, father of Sally, the little girl with the jam on her shirt. Peter Godso.
What happened, Beals? Is Martha really dead?
Robbie.
She's dead, all right.
Robbie sees the mannequin with the sign around its neck, genuine Robbie Beals brand lobster and gear, and yanks the sign off with a snarl. He scowls at it. Hatch has slogged around from the back just in time to see and react to this. Peter Godso follows Robbie back inside to monitor developments. Hatch follows them both.
112. Interior. The market. Afternoon. Lots of people milling around. Prominent among them is Molly Anderson talking to Kat, but mostly worrying about Mike. We see Ralphie halfway down one of the aisles and mooning over the sugary cereals. Molly, as Hatch enters.
Where's Mike? Is he all right?
Hatch. Fine. Out back with the prisoner. I just have to let him in.
Other people move in on him.
Peter Godso.
Is he a local?
Hatch. I never saw him before in my life. Lots of relief at this. Others try to grab Hatch's attention and ask questions, but Molly isn't among them. The sooner Hatch does his job, the sooner she'll have her husband back. Hatch fights his way up the center aisle, pausing to ruffle Ralphie's hair. Ralphie gives him an affectionate grin. Robbie still has the sign, is tapping it angrily against his thigh. Molly sees it and winces a little.
113. Exterior, on the loading dock, with Mike and Linoge. They stand facing each other in the driving snow. There are several beats of silence. Then,
Linoge.
Give me what I want, and I'll go away.
Mike. What is it you want? That smile shakes Mike in spite of himself.
114. Interior, the constable's office with Hatch. He comes bustling in and hurries to the loading door. He turns the deadbolt knob and tries to open it. The door still won't open. He pushes hard, then harder. No luck. As a last resort, he slams his shoulder against the door. Nothing. The door might as well be dipped in concrete.
Hatch.
Mike?
Mike, voiceover.
Come on, hurry up. It's freezing out here.
Hatch.
It won't open. It's stuck.
115.
Exterior, resume loading dock with Mike and Linoge. Mike is totally exasperated. Everything has gone wrong with this piece of work. It's a complete Russian fire drill. Linoge is still smiling his faint little smile. For him, everything's right on track.
Mike, did you unlock it?
Hatch, rather hurt by this.
Of course I did, Mike.
Mike.
Then wail on it. There's probably ice in the jam.
116. Interior. Resume constable's office with Hatch. Robbie is standing in the door behind Hatch, observing all this with heavy contempt. Hatch rolls his eyes, knowing perfectly well the door isn't frozen. He already wailed on it. Nevertheless, he hits the door another couple of good shots. Robbie crosses the room, stopping on the way to drop the joke sign on Mike's constable's desk. Hatch turns toward him, startled.
Robbie, who is a physically bigger man, moves Hatch aside, none too gently.
Robbie.
Let me.
He hits the door several more good shots, his look of confidence gradually subsiding. Hatch watches with subtle but understandable satisfaction. Robbie gives up, rubbing his shoulder.
Robbie.
Anderson, you'll have to come around and take him through the store.
117. Exterior.
resume loading dock with Mike and Linoge. Mike rolls his eyes in annoyance. Beale's in the constable's office, still meddling. Oh, goody. Better and better. Mike.
Hatch.
Hatch. Voiceover.
Yeah.
Mike. Come around. Pointedly. Alone. Hatch. Voiceover. Right there. Mike turns his attention back to Linoge. Mike. Be a little bit longer. Just stand quiet. Linoge.
Remember what I said, Mr. Anderson. And when the time comes, we'll talk.
He smiles. 118. Exterior. Main Street. Little Tall Island. Late afternoon. The houses and storefronts are graying out, starting to look like mirages as the storm intensifies. 119. Exterior. Breakwater and lighthouse. Huge waves crash the rocks. Foam leaps into the air. On this image, we fade to black. This ends Act 4.